Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Is resistance to immigration from Latin America grounded in valid concerns about the U.S. economy, the law, and the distribution of resources, or is it a form of publicly tolerated racism? My guest today worries that current discussions of what's been called America's immigration crisis are more likely to stir xenophobic sentiments than to generate workable solutions for newcomers from places like Mexico and Central America. And he worries that many native-born Americans see some immigrants' undocumented status as justification to treat them with open hostility. Heriberto Roman is professor of law at Florida International University. His new book is called Those Damned Immigrants, America's Hysteria Over Undocumented Immigration. Heriberto, welcome to Think.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So a lot of the animosity you describe here against immigrants would seem to be counterintuitive, given that almost all of us are descended from people who arrived in the U.S. from somewhere else. Why do so many people romanticize the contributions of immigrants from past generations, but resent the presence of those who've arrived more recently?
Well, I think legally we've constructed them as the other, even with the label of, and it's a misnomer, the label of so-called illegal persons, right, an illegal immigrant. Throughout our history, this is nothing new, as particularly over the last century, we've had somewhat of a schizophrenic relationship with the undocumented. At times when we need them in the context of agriculture or building a railway system, we open our arms, but at other times during political upheavals such as world wars or economic downturns, we reject them. And it's been an ongoing cycle that hasn't been challenged thus far.
Yeah, one of your chapters describes a really a strange relationship that we've had to Mexico for exactly that reason, that we sort of open our arms at certain points and then quite literally throw up barriers at others.
Yeah, it's part of an economic underculture, and I raise these issues to not so much attack certain groups, but expose the light, so to speak, with respect to this underground economic culture of the economic demand created within the United States historically, but particularly during recent times in the context of construction, agriculture, and service industries. These industries that are benefiting from undocumented immigrants because of the low wages and the lack of benefits that are provided to them, yet they're not part of the debate. And we should realize that these individuals that are coming to this country come because there is a need for them. And we need to have a more honest debate. And that includes the cost to the business sectors with respect to those parts that benefit from undocumented immigration.
So there may be a need for this immigrants for this immigration. On the other hand, it is true that a significant percentage of first-generation immigrants have come to the U.S. without legal permission, approximately 11 million right now. How has that fact been used to justify anti-immigrant sentiments?
Well, it is, you know, just the sheer number, it's somewhat shocking in terms of the average American, because in many respects, the discussion isn't often put into context. And one of the administration president's office, to be it the Democrat or Republican in office, there's a repeated reference to a broken immigration system just by bantering about that large number. But one of the things we should realize in this discussion, and I try to set the record straight with respect to it, is that most demographers and experts that have looked at these issues, including the federal government, said the most approach has written on this very point, and I said the most appropriate way to look at immigration and immigration rates is look at immigration in light of the overall population. And when we do so, we'd come to the conclusion, and they have come to the conclusion, that immigration actually is unremarkable at this time. It's among its lowest rates relative to the overall population. But yet, in part because it's very easy for a politician that wants to sound tough on crime, on national security, to attack a group group that is defenseless, a group that's that are no one's constituents and that are voiceless in our society. So I think that's part of what's going on, somewhat of a distortion of the facts. And that was my goal in this project, to try to have a more honest and balanced debate, because this is not just a book that speaks to attacking the anti-immigrant lobby. I actually point out, particularly with respect to local and state governments, there are some real issues that they raise that need to be addressed. And without it, the two groups will never come together in terms of the comprehensive reform.
Well, you know, in terms of, you know, there are people who feel that we're sort of being overwhelmed by the presence of illegal immigrants. Even that 11 million figure, compared to the overall population, is something like 0.3%, which instantly sounds less daunting, except in communities, as you mentioned, local communities, where it's a significantly larger percentage.
Right, and urban communities. And I think part of a reform effort that we'll likely not see, by the way, in terms of the current discussions, but a reform effort that will eventually address all these points has to take into consideration things like the short-term costs to local and state communities with respect to education, with respect to health care. And those are points that are raised by, and I wouldn't call those that raise it anti-immigrant, but those that are raised by individuals that have concern about reform. And I think those concerns are legitimate. And I think the pro-immigrant lobby or political party, let's say the Democrats, need to address those concerns. And thus far, we haven't really engaged in those type of debates. But by the same token, on the political right, what I hear in large part is the repeated xenophobic type references that even this week, Congressman Steve King just made reference to immigration from violent societies. And, you know, again, it defies logic as well as history. And they repeatedly engage in these sound bites that will provoke fear and don't engage in honest discussions, because what happens, and I believe what will happen now, will be an enforcement first or an enforcement only approach to reform, perhaps with some small efforts with respect to Dreamers in terms of the Dream Act and increase employment visas. And I don't consider that comprehensive reform.
So we will talk about the influence of xenophobia in a moment. But I want you to address people who say, look, for me, Eddie Bredthau, it is not personal. It is a matter of the fact that these individuals have come here illegally, and therefore that must mean that they would be inclined to break other laws in this country. What do we know about that?
Well, I think that's a fair point, and for the average citizen, that's the dominant narrative from the news, from politicians, and otherwise. But the fact of the matter is that studies after studies that examine these issues, both by state governments and various think tanks across the political spectrum, have pointed out that particularly undocumented immigrant communities are less inclined to be violent, to be involved in crime, as a matter of fact, because they're part of a subculture and live in a constant state of fear. The opposite is true. But you don't get that impression from the media. And if you look at programs on cable television in particular, like Gangland and others, you get the impression that there's this overthrow. And that's the first point I raised. I draw a parallel between that iconic War of the Worlds radio broadcast and the impression that our society gives our citizenry with respect to immigration. It's just not the case, and the facts bear my point out, as opposed to what the dominant media narrative is. They're less inclined to be involved in crime. They're more family oriented. They're here to work in sectors and do jobs that no one else wants to do, and without them, frankly, our quality of life would be very different and further down, from a much worse set of quality of life in terms of agricultural foods and other types of benefits they provide us.
How important is the distinction between documented and undocumented residents, immigrant residents, in terms of American attitudes toward immigrants?
I'm not sure there's always a distinction being drawn with respect to the discussion, and it's born against the the documented immigrants. The groups are lumped together, and that's part of the discussion I provide in this book, that when talking about undocumented immigration or illegal immigration, it has a slippage effect. It has an effect with respect to societal impressions on undocumented immigrants, but as well as groups that are identified as the other, be it in the context of Asians or Arab Americans, and in particular, Latino and Latina Americans, the view to clump them all together and the presumption of being the other. And that is the fear that I try to address in terms of this book, not only in terms of addressing appropriate policy decisions in the future, but also to point out that this is an issue that is even broader than the 11 million that are affected by undocumented immigration, because we have that has been written about more recently, particularly in the Trayvon Martin matter, the issues of implicit bias and the effect that these attacks have, not only on the targeted groups, which is unfair to begin with, but also the effect on other parts of the community. So I don't think when Jeff Sessions or Steve King, Senator Sessions, or Congressman King make these types of baseless comments and again trying to be demagogues in their efforts, they fully realize or fully care about its impact on other communities.
Is it fair to draw a line from discomfort with immigration from Latin America and fear of the loss of white privilege in this country?
Well, I think it's implicit, but I, in term, and the line is subtle. But I think in terms of trying to speak to those that are decision makers and calling for an informed debate, I tend to shy away. Perhaps in my younger days, in my 20s and 30s, I would perhaps be more inclined to be more a rock or rabble rouser with respect to these issues. But I don't think you get very far when trying to have an informed discussion to just point fingers and again engage in the demagoguery that the other side does, that basically accuses them of hate solely as their motivation. I think some people have that motivation out of fear and ignorance, but I think a lot of people are swayed by again the lack of counter narrative based on facts on these issues, and for the most part, our media, with the exception of informed voices like yourself and others that I've been on other shows, but few and far between when compared to the dominant narrative that you hear from Bill O'Reilly and others, Lou Dobbs and of the like, that it's important to have a discussion that again is based on empirical data and based on facts, and not just basically pointing a negative finger at someone for the hate they're spewing.
From your perspective, can you see how people who take a different position from yours are able to cherry pick from studies? I mean, I would think for both sides, the temptation would be there to only look at studies that confirm what they believe.
Oh, that's the state of affairs, and that's before I would say the last 20 or 30 years, discussions were based purely on hate or sympathy, depending on your perspective. And then as more and more groups, be it from the political left or right, have tried to engage in this discussions, we tend to go to the side that we know is going to pick address our sensibilities. And what happens is that we preach to the converted. So that's actually the goal of my book, to try to examine. And it is hard it was quite challenging to be exhaustive with respect to this effort, because as we know, there tend to be studies on these issues coming out at least once a month. But I tried to even address studies that came out within days of publication, including most recent one from the Heritage Foundation.
Let me jump in here because we have to take a break. My guest is Heriberto Roman. We're talking about his new book, Those Damned Immigrants, America's Hysteria Over Undocumented Immigration. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to personal finance. Fall registration opens on August 6th. Catalogs can be requested at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Heriberto Roman, who is professor of law at Florida International University and author of the new book, Those Damned Immigrants, America's Hysteria Over Undocumented Immigration. You can be part of the conversation now at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Heriberto, to the extent that you say you really want to be unbiased in your examination of the information, you really don't necessarily want to alienate people who are against immigration. Using a term like hysteria in your title obviously was something that you had to think about before you went there. Why that word, and what makes it an appropriate word to describe the overwhelming sentiment in this country toward undocumented immigration?
Well, I think it created an interesting juxtaposition with the first part of the title, which is the kind of reference that perhaps individuals, particularly certain anti-immigrant politicians, have taken by saying those damned immigrants, and then juxtaposing that with the historical reference. I think it's actually appropriate when one looks at the labels and the markers that have occurred over the last century with respect to undocumented immigrants, and even the classic moniker for the undocumented immigrants here to four until perhaps this past year, where the references were always illegal immigrants, to suggest that an individual, as opposed to their actions, are that it would be grammatically more appropriate, are illegal. So I think it's actually a fair assessment of how we've described and labeled these individuals that have been important cogs to our economy.
So nobody would get anywhere with an argument to say that, you know, we have completely solved the issues we have in this country with racism. However, we have come to a place where Americans sort of understand that there are certain things you do not say about members of another race. You say that very often immigrants from Latin American countries are one of those targets that have not yet been declared off limits.
Oh yeah, I think that was one of the primary motivations for my writing this book. With respect to other books, I had looked at American history on a host of issues, but not with an immigration focus. But more and more, the attacks and labels that have occurred in particularly in recent times, and when comparing those types of attacks, for example, attacks made by Herman Cain, by comedians or entertainers like Cat Williams and others, comparing those to attacks that we have found to be intolerable by similar individuals, such as the Seinfeld character Kramer with his racist attack on his show, or various other individuals, where we have immediate reaction. But again, because of the misnomer and inappropriate label of illegal immigrants, it provides a license to say and do what we want that goes virtually unchallenged in our society. And that is a significant goal of this project, to point that out and point out that hypocrisy that we should find unacceptable, but also to highlight for those that may be affected and perhaps unwittingly affected by it, including documented immigrants and those that could be cast as an outsider group, to remind them that this again has a slippage effect.
You mentioned Herman Cain. He famously, or maybe infamously, said that not only should we build a border fence, we should electrify that fence.
That's right, with preferably alligators in any moats that would be associated with the double border. And he did that to before an audience that was almost exclusively white. And he said it was a joke later, but the response to his statement came with cheers. Again, he was it was shameful, and perhaps I'm asking too much of him, but as a representative or an individual from a group that historically has faced discrimination, you would expect a bit more, irrespective of political viewpoints.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's go on the phones now to Eric in Dallas. Hello, Eric.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Hi. My question or comment is, you know, I grew up in Dallas. 30, 40 years ago, you know, we had immigrants here also, you know, Latinos, all that, and they wanted to fit in. But it seems like today we're all having to change for them, like their language barrier. You see products at stores, it's in Spanish also. You know, you call on phones, it's always, you know, press 2 for English, you know, and 1 is, you know, in Spanish, whatever it is. It seems like they don't want to fit in like everyone used to years ago.
What do you think, Heriberto?
Well, I'm actually not sure that's the case. I mean, with respect, for example, to the business sectors responding, be it in terms of the examples of pressing 2 for Spanish, I don't think that particularly undocumented immigrants are creating that. Again, they're silent members of our society, individuals that live in a constant state of fear. But I think it is the business sector responding to the diversity within our community and within our society, and that is to be expected, and frankly, it should be welcomed. We see that in various other communities, and in California with respect to the Vietnamese community, in New York City with respect to a host of different communities, and our American ethos has been to be accepting and recognizing that our diversity brings us strength. So I'm not entirely in agreement with respect to a change in philosophy. If anything, I think the business sectors are becoming more savvy, and it's certainly not driven by individuals, again, that have no political voice in our society.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Next on the phones, we'll go to Trophy Club. We have William on the line. Hi, William.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a question, sir, on your previous statement about those of us, and I am on the right, who favor legal immigration. Is it fair to lump us into a group that opposes all immigration when all, in fact, all we do is oppose all the illegal immigration? And having lived in Europe, where there was quite a few immigrants, and myself, I had a work permit, there was a very good effective use of the immigrants, and they were controlled, and they had ability to select those best from other countries. In our current situation, we have a self-selection model of those, principally from Central America, many of whom do a terrific job and I think are exploited, but is that where we want to go for immigration policy?
Thanks for your call.
Well, I think that the question was a good one. It was a bit complex. There are quite a few points within that question. I'll try to address the first part of it and point out that I don't, that my goal is not to clump any groups together. What I actually want to do is move the discussion forward to have a more informed discussion. Those that are supportive of legal or documented immigrants. I don't attack them by any stretch of the imagination in this book, and nor was it my intent in terms of this conversation here. But more importantly, what I want to do is bring those that have an honest difference of opinion and bring them together to have a discussion, again, not based on the classic arguments, the sound bites that we hear by various politicians that have skewed this debate, again, for well over a century. I think the reference made with respect to immigrants and the juxtaposition of documented versus undocumented is appropriate. And I dedicated a chapter specifically on defending the more legitimate arguments and points raised in terms of immigration and pointing out the failures of the political left in terms of the pro-immigrant advocates, in terms of the failure to discuss the strains on local economies, particularly in healthcare and education. And frankly, the first person I criticize in the book is our current president with respect to his characterization of the state of affairs of immigration. So I think it's an effort to engage, again, in an honest and balanced approach that we rarely, if ever, hear in any circles.
What is standing in the way of simply making it easier and more affordable and more accessible for low-skilled immigrants who choose to live in this country and work in this country to do so legally?
I think there are efforts afoot with respect to that. The proposal in the Senate with the W visas, another way to put it, is a guest worker program for future immigrants. A proposal that I frankly include, and my proposal here is not a left wing proposal. It's a quite moderate or conservative proposal with respect to future immigrants that many immigration advocates would have disagreed with me when given presentations. But part of the problem, again, is the fear of the unknown, is the fear that again, these fires are stoked by irresponsible individuals, including politicians and media types that, you know, individuals, including Lou Dobbs, who, it's my understanding, happened to be married to a Mexican woman, that makes reference to the fact that undocumented immigrants have created a leprosy invasion, so to speak, or epidemic occurring in the United States. And again, when facts were borne out, instead of the thousands of cases that Dobbs had made reference to, it was actually a few hundred, and none were attributed, frankly, to immigration. This hysteria, this easy way to stir the fires, and frankly, it provokes interest. It sells. And that's what's going on here, not only for politicians, but in the media. I think there's a real option to do this, but what we hear, particularly in the House, is that we need enforcement first, enforcement only. And what the realities are is that as a result of our economy slowing down over the last decade or so, the net undocumented immigration in this country has been virtually zero. And we never hear this, frankly, with respect to the politicians. Media types do every once in a while address it, but again, the narrative is skewed. So I hope that with a call to facts, a call to data, and engaged in the works of empiricists, we can begin to have a more honest and open discussion that will lead to the proposal you're suggesting.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next on the phone to Michael in Fort Worth. Hi, Michael.
Hi. I just wanted to point out that I'm Latino. I'm actually American. So I've been going, when people ask me what my ethnicity is, I just now go by American. But I just want to comment on a few things that he was saying. I took a few notes that, you know, truly as an American, I think of Americans first. And when you have undocumented individuals that come to this country who get free tuition, benefits, and work that American taxpayers pay for, then I feel that is unfair to other people who are Americans who live here, who work hard, who try to get ahead. And so I'm on the fence, left or right, but, you know, there are some issues that come about or benefits that those illegals get. And I'm not just talking about Mexicans that come across. I'm talking about any person that comes from the outside into the States and takes advantage of the perks that the United States are giving them. Again, I was in Mexico not too long ago. I was asked what ethnicity I was. I thought I always referred to myself as Mexican. They said, "You're not Mexican. You're from America. You were born there, correct?" And I said, "Yeah." And that's when I first began to realize that I could go to any other country and they would discriminate against me the way that Americans are discriminating against people coming into our country. So it can't be this thing about, well, Mexicans, and they provide all the labor that other people don't want. Well, if Americans would pay a fair labor, give a higher wages, these Americans would work. So I think that the dialogue needs to continue, and I think that we need to have a hard look at what we're talking about when we're saying these Mexicans will work at jobs that nobody else wants.
Well, you've raised a lot of points, Michael, and I think they're all good ones to have addressed, but I want to make sure that Eddie Berger has a chance. So thank you so much for your call.
Thank you. That was, there were quite a few points raised here. And I'll address the last one first. I'm in complete agreement with respect to the issue concerning wages and in terms of the undocumented immigrants being employed at wages that others don't want. But again, we are blaming the undocumented immigrants for a state of affairs that is occurring, and it's dictated by domestic economic sources. So again, we're demonizing a group that, again, is coming here to do things that the rest of us don't want. And if we engage in that discussion, in an open discussion about it, we can begin to have changes and reform to with respect to the minimum wage, increasing the minimum wage versus other opportunities that are available. But right now, it's not going to change. It's not going to change by continuing to basically demonize the group that are the victims of in many respects the decisions that are made, the economic decisions in our society. I think our focus is misdirected if we do that. And I think the caller's reference is, again, looking at the state of affairs, the unfairness with respect to minimum wage and other factors, and blaming the undocumented immigrants. It's just not their fault with respect to this. I think we need more honest discussions about the debate, but to direct the attack or levy the attack on the immigrants, I think it's misguided. And with respect to a host of other points that he raised, I don't think, again, all the statements were accurate, and it's certainly not being addressed in current reform efforts. With respect to education, that issue was resolved as of 1982 in a Supreme Court decision, Plyler versus Doe, that originated out of the state of Texas, where undocumented children were prevented from going to school K through 12, and the Supreme Court of the United States pointed out that because of the importance of education, the foundational right, not necessarily fundamental right, but foundational right of education, these individuals, irrespective of their immigration status, had the right to have education. But in terms of other government access or largesse, it's just not the case. The IRA amendments in 1986 did away with the opportunity for the undocumented to receive governmental benefits, so they don't receive that. In terms of college education, many of these individuals in the vast majority of states don't have access. So, and particularly for Dreamers, that are the most compelling groups in terms of this, that are raised here largely in the United States, thinking themselves as citizens or residents, only to find out when they seek to go to college they can't because of their parents' status, and as a result, their status. And so, again, we are, I think, blaming the wrong individuals. I think the individual's reference of being treated like another in Mexico, irrespective of his background, somewhat speaks to my very point. We should have a more honest discussion and stop pointing fingers at the other.
My guest is Heriberto Roman. He is professor of law at Florida International University and author of the new book, Those Damned Immigrants, America's Hysteria Over Undocumented Immigration. You can be part of the conversation now by calling in to 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Classes are available in everything from fine arts to personal finance. Fall registration opens on August 6th. Catalogs can be requested at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Professor of Law at Florida International University, Heriberto Roman. His new book is called Those Damned Immigrants, America's Hysteria Over Undocumented Immigration. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, call us. The number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Heriberto, I want to talk about this for a minute. There are people who look back at the 1986 amnesty, which I realize is a loaded word in these conversations that we're having today, but they say, look, we tried this once. We tried to make it easier. We tried to allow people who had come here illegally to obtain legal status. And instead, you know, 25 years later, we have even more of a population of undocumented immigrants in this country. So obviously, opening the doors does not work. What do you say to that?
Well, I have quite a few reactions to that, and somewhat mixed emotions. Now, you have certain
immigration experts that believe, one, it wasn't an opening of the doors. It was an incomplete one. I don't necessarily take that viewpoint in terms of I think the amnesty efforts in 1986 are really eye-opening for a host of other reasons. I think they're eye-opening because when we look at the overall impact of the amnesty efforts throughout the 1980s, particularly in 1986, the studies that have examined the economic impact of that amnesty have pointed out that it had an overall positive effect on our economy. So the belief that the amnesty efforts, again, hurt our country are inaccurate. Where there is legitimacy in the concern is with respect to the fact that we're having to revisit the issue. And again, the reason we have to revisit the issue, because the reform efforts in 1986 were incomplete. It didn't address how to deal with future immigration waves. And that's going to happen, frankly. These waves are going to happen, again, depending on our domestic economic interests for increased labor. While these issues are left unresolved, there won't be comprehensive reform. The Senate bill comes close to addressing these issues with the W visas, the guest worker program, a program that I agree with in terms of having a means to not only address future waves from the status of undocumented, taking away from their status of undocumented, but also a means to track those rates in terms of not only the economy, but our national security. So I think those that have those concerns about the amnesty in 1980s have their facts wrong with respect to the economic interests, but also have some legitimacy in their argument. But the reason there's legitimacy in the argument is because the reform in 1986 was incomplete and we need comprehensive reform. I'm not certain we're going to get that now.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Paul in Rockwall. Hey, Paul.
Hi. There's a lot I could say about this, but I'll try to keep it brief. Seems to me that what happened back in the 70s or so was there a lot of jobs from this country that got shipped down to Mexico, and then they got shipped out of Mexico to the Far East to someplace else where there was even cheaper labor. And so it's kind of like, as a result, it seems as though you had a lot of people who would have had opportunities right there in Mexico. Now they don't have those opportunities, and they want to find jobs, so they move to where the jobs are, and they happen to be in this country, kind of like the inner cities in this country, where, you know, if the jobs aren't there, you want to get out of it. You want to get out of the inner city, you want to get out of Mexico if you can, to try to find a place where there's better opportunities. So what would it take to have people go back to Mexico, or the ones who are there to stay? What kind of opportunities would have to be created in order for them to stay? Because I don't think they just leave just because they want to leave and they think there's something better. I think they'd rather stay in Mexico if they could.
Interesting question. What do you think, Heriberto?
I think he's right, but the fact is that that's what's going on right now. Right, because of our lack of legal reform and accountability in the business sector, not unlike the frustration expressed by the previous caller or with respect to minimum wages and other efforts, what we have here is a lack of social responsibility on the part of our corporate sector, and again, that's kind of melded or there's a form of intersectional discussion on the two issues. But what happens in terms of the intersectional nature of the responsibility of our private sector with respect to NGOs and other corporations and immigration? And at the end result, what happens is we tend to blame the immigrants for the state of affairs or a lack of accountability or reform that, again, we've tried to see repeatedly over the last decade with respect to corporations and time and time again from the Supreme Court to the legislature.
legislative ranks, we don't get a sense of responsibility, and that's something that hopefully will happen in the future. But as things stand now, we're going to have a problem, I believe, 20 to 30 years from now with respect to obtaining labor, because the Mexican economy is improving, notwithstanding what we hear in many circles. But the amount of labor that has come in of undocumented immigrants is at a net zero, and the reason for that is that our economy has slowed down, and their economy, because of NAFTA and other reasons, has done fairly well with respect to the individuals that would otherwise be undocumented immigrants. So I think we need to have these conversations, but these conversations, as the callers are alluding to, are broader than just purely the immigration discussion.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next with Carrie in Dallas. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a quick comment. Both of my parents are immigrants. They came from this country, from Mexico and from Germany, and both of them had advanced degrees. Both of them speak multiple languages, and their biggest frustration was that many immigrants refuse to learn English. And in light of that, they'll never go to college. They're never going to succeed. And they're never going to do anything but menial work. And that is my biggest frustration, is we're allowing it to happen in this country. And we need to stop. We need to make it a law that you must learn English, for their sake as well as ours. And I think that's why a lot of people get very frustrated with the immigrants.
What do you think, Alberto?
Well, the current Senate bill right now has that requirement. That is one of the conditions for a comprehensive reform that the Senate has proposed. That's actually stated in the bill that the Senate has passed. And right now, leading senators like Senator McCain, as everyone knows, a Republican and former presidential nominee on his party's ticket, has included as part of this Gang of Eight group. So there will be groups on the political left, and I'm sure the ACLU, that will have some challenges to this from a constitutional matter, and they may have some validity to it, but from a political standpoint, it's already part of the discussions with respect to these the reform efforts. And in all honesty, the data shows that not necessarily the immigrants themselves, but certainly their children, are doing well in terms of not only learning English, but excelling in school. And it is the current state of immigration that allows these individuals that are often otherwise known as dreamers the inability to advance themselves. So those that like this caller, that wants the opportunity for advancement, should be all in favor of both the Senate bill and the calls by dreamers to give them the opportunity to better themselves, because that is part of the American dream. So I'm in agreement with her, and I believe at least the Senate is in complete agreement with her. I'd like to see it move forward.
Okay, so you addressed this briefly earlier, but of course different states have taken different positions on young adults without legal status who want to attend college after being brought to the U.S. as children, not to say against their will, but sort of, you know, at an age before they had any control over this. And just to be clear, no state is saying illegal immigrants get free tuition in this state. They're saying undocumented immigrants, if you want to call them illegal immigrants, can pay the same as other state residents. Is that correct?
Yes, and provided that most of these states have addressed the issue in the context of deferred action. Many of them have said if they've received deferred action, they're entitled to a program passed by President Obama that allows these individuals to have a status or a protection for 2 years. And many of the states, including California and others, have allowed this based on certain conditions. Yes, it's not free tuition by any stretch of the imagination, but if these individuals have lived most of their lives in a particular state, and normally it takes a year and a day to consider one a resident, the states have merely said, well, we're going to see you as residents, not unlike every other individual that have lived here for more than a year.
If the resistance to immigration on the part of a lot of people is that we don't need any more unskilled workers in this country, it would seem to make sense to people on both sides of the political spectrum to want to cultivate more well-educated immigrants.
I would agree. And actually, the studies that have examined the issue, because one of the attacks, and I address specifically the economic attacks against undocumented immigrants, say that they're taking away jobs, they're lowering wages. That's not been borne out, once again, by economists that have examined the issue. And I'm not talking about pro-immigrant think tanks. There are individuals such as groups such as the Immigration Policy Center, and as well as other groups that have come to this conclusion. But these are the conclusions brought by the federal government that have examined these issues over the course of several years, and conservative think tanks or libertarian think tanks, depending on how you want to classify them, but like the Cato Institute, that have examined these issues and sanctioned a host of studies that have found that essentially undocumented immigrants are imperfect substitutes for domestic workers. So the impact of these undocumented immigrants is actually to increase wages for the domestic workers, and it does not sound, you'd have to read the not only my book but also the studies, it's an alternative way to examine these issues, but have found that because of the language barrier, these individuals really don't take jobs away and actually provide managerial opportunities for domestic workers. So they don't take jobs away, and they certainly don't lower wages. And again, this is across the political spectrum. I don't think, when you think of the Cato Institute with respect to their views on Second Amendment, on affirmative action, on a host of other issues, you don't think them of this liberal bastion of thought. If anything, they are libertarian and or conservative, and they've come to the exact conclusions that I'm referencing to right now, and I document all of these studies and their conclusions in this book.
Given that different individuals can take the same data and come up with very different conclusions, what have you learned about what it takes to diffuse arguments about immigration, at least to the extent that we can collaboratively come up with some reasonable compromises?
Well, I think if the state of affairs was as you posed it, I think I'd have more of a challenge. But the realities are that different individuals and a host of individuals, be it, again, political pundits, politicians, or academics or pseudo-academics, a host of individuals that make these points, what they do is tend to look at one or two studies that bears out what they want them to say, be it the Heritage Foundation studies, that have been largely discredited by the left and the right for failure to take to consider, for example, the Heritage Foundation have examined these issues. Not only have they come under scrutiny by having one of their authors having xenophobic and racist statements in other writings, but also when looking at the cost of undocumented immigrants, they have utterly failed in two different studies to look at the benefits they provide in terms of taxes and other opportunities. So those studies have been flawed, and what others have failed to do, both on the political left and right, is to be comprehensive or attempt to be comprehensive with these studies. That's exactly what I try to do. I look at the major attacks on undocumented immigrants, the cultural population overthrow, the purported crime wave, the purported negative economic impact, and I examine the leading studies, the most recognize studies on the political left and right, and come to conclusions in light of those studies, not based on my own opinion, but and contend with the study. So I think someone that had a different opinion would be hard-pressed, looking at the work that I've looked to, the host of studies, I'm talking dozens and dozens of studies on these issues, and come to a different conclusion. The only way they could, if they failed to actually read the studies themselves.
My guest has been Heriberto Román. He is professor of law at Florida International University. His new book is called Those Damned Immigrants, America's Hysteria Over Undocumented Immigration. Heriberto, thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Today's show was engineered by Justin Martin. Our podcast is produced by Christine McConnell. We had help on the phones today from Christina Martinez. Lindsay Connect produced the show. Jeff Whittington is our executive producer. You can learn more about Think and download upcoming programs or download programs and learn about upcoming shows at kera.org/think. If you want to send a comment, question, or suggestion, it goes to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day. We'll be right back.